Would you open your Bibles to the 24th chapter of Matthew? Matthew chapter 24. We're beginning reading in verse 1. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple. And his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. In the 38th verse of the preceding chapter, he said, Your house is left to you desolate. That had to put something heavy on their minds. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? That's a pretty heavy question, isn't it? And Jesus answered and said unto him, Take heed that no man deceive you. It's significant, and without time to question, he said, Boys, you better be careful. You're going to be fooled about this one. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. Lots of folks will be. Ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in divers places. All these are just the beginning of sorrows. That's all they are. Then they shall deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall arise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold, but he that shall endure to the end, he's one going to be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. Then let them be which be in Judea flee unto the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days. But pray that your flight be not in winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be a great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, but for the elect's sake those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, Lo, here's Christ, or there is Christ, don't believe that. Pay attention to it. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if possible they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before, wherefore, if they shall say unto you, Hey, he's out in the desert. Go out in Arizona and find him. New Mexico now. Now, he's over in Mexico. Now, he's out in Colorado. Behold, he's in the secret chambers. We got a place hid away in the wilderness, and out there, that's where he is. Don't pay attention to that either. For as the lightning cometh out of the east and shineth even to the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened. The tribulation he's talking about is what he spoke of in verse 21. That tribulation that began after the event that's described just above that. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heaven shall be shaken. All that's going to happen. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, one from one end of heaven to the other. Now, learn something. Learn the parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, you know that summer's near. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it's near, even at the door. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two shall be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the meal, the one taken, the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not the Son of Man cometh. We have been speaking to you in a series under the topic, the general topic of judgment. Established the desire, only the necessity of judgment, but its desirability. There's got to be judgment. There has to be an accounting of everything. We also noted the valid place of this idea of judgment in the gospel. When the Apostle Paul preached to Felix, he reasoned with him of righteousness and temperance and judgment. Judgment to come. We noted that the Scriptures tells us that judgment must begin at the house of God. And if the righteous scarcely be saved, where shall the sinner and the ungodly appear? If God starts judging with his own beloved people, what an awesome thing to contemplate when he begins to judge the sinners and the ungodly. His judgment concerning the house of God is the beginnings of judgment. He starts right there. He keeps short record with his kids. His children's judgment are immediate. Now that's necessary. We're demonstrating that all the way throughout this. We had a little chart up here, the types of judgment, three types. There is a didactic or a teaching type of judgment. That applies to God's children alone. It's present and ongoing right now. That has to do and rises out of God's graciousness. There is an administrative judgment whereby God, who orders and administrates and watches over all things on this earth, that is present and ongoing, that involves both believers and unbelievers. And then there is a punitive judgment that arises from God's righteousness and his holiness that demands satisfaction and complete and perfect restitution for every wrong thing, and demands reward and blessings for every right thing. That's penal and satisfactory. So far as Christians are concerned, it's past. God took care of that at the cross in our Lord Jesus Christ. He, in his life, in his obedience, earned for us. Every good thing that'll ever happen, every reward that you'll ever happen, Jesus bought it in his obedience. He purchased for us the whole wealth of eternal treasure in his life and in his obedience and his surrender to the Father. And also every evil thing, every wrong thing that we've ever done, he paid the full and complete satisfactory atonement for that in his death on the cross. So that's past as far as we're concerned, but it's all in the future so far as unbelievers are concerned. Now, I'm still in the same series, but what I'm going to speak to you about this morning is not judgment exactly. I've got to get into a little eschatology. Now, I told you, end time study will be necessary. People who study eschatology, that is the end time things, just to find out what's going to happen in the end time, always miss it. Because end time study is not a valid study within itself. It exists only out of necessity of the nature of salvation and of judgment. And so that's why the Lord is dealing with it here. The question has been put before them, and these truths that we are going to bring to focus this morning form the basis for the judgment parables. What we have in Matthew 24, the answer to the disciples' question, form the necessary premise, the basis for the logic that follows in the judgment parables. They will be misunderstood unless we understood what the Lord is saying. Now, the 24th chapter of Matthew is a river, extremely difficult to navigate. It's full of snags and sandbars and crooks and treacherous obstacles. And most folks get hung up on one or more or other of those. And so may the grace of our God give us clarity of mind and purity of exegesis as we try to give an overview of Matthew 24. Now, as we've already said, a question has been put to the disciples, by the disciples to the Lord in verse 2. And they were discreet enough to wait until they got him alone in private and said, "Tell us when all this is going to happen. And how are we going to know just before it happens? We want to know what the sign is of your coming, and we want to know what the sign is of the end of the world." Those two questions, second question has two parts. Now, here's his reply. The first question is answered with an order of events for the age. He gives an order of events for the age, and they can be identified. We will try to help you on those in just a little bit. He gives an order of events. These are the things that's going to happen. You can expect them. They will certainly come to pass. And these events of the age have certain identifying signs of consecutive events. In other words, he says, when this happens, you can be sure that this is going to happen. And if you see this happening, you'll know that this has already happened. This is where they happen. This happens, this happens, this happens, and this happens. So the events themselves are signs that other events are about to transpire. That's the answer to the first question. When shall these things be? He tells them when they're going to follow one another. The second question is not answered. At least it is not answered in the way they wanted it to be answered. They said, "Now, Lord, if you will tell us what the sign is of you coming, and the sign is of the end of the world, everybody can get ready because they'll see the sign and they'll be ready." But he didn't tell them. All that he said here, he yet left that question. And so far as they expected an answer, he left it unanswered. There will be no sign of the coming of his coming, or there will be no sign of the end of the world. Now, he said, "Then shall all the tribes of the earth more, they shall see the sign of the Son of Man in the heaven." But there, that's not a sign of his coming, that's him. See, he's already come then. All the tribes, every eye shall see. It isn't going to be any exclusive group that's in on it, you know, is going to look for it. Everybody's going to see him simultaneously. There is no sign of his coming. There is no sign of the end of the world. That, the fact that there is no sign, there will be no answer to those last two questions, is the basis of the judgment parables. When we get into them, we will demonstrate that. Now, let me defend that statement. There will be no signs of his coming, no signs of the end of the world. There are, verse 36, of that day and hour knoweth no man. No, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Now, there are folks said, well, you know, no man knew it now, but we got to figure it out now. No, they haven't. He said, be careful. Don't let anybody deceive you about this. No man knows it. And then there were folks who will immediately follow that and try to make a sign out of verse 37 and 38. As the days of Noah, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For in the days of before the flood, they were eating and drinking. Well, you notice that's been going on lately. Folks eating and drinking. Everywhere I go, folks eating and drinking. There's never been such a proliferation of fast food places and restaurants. That must be a sign of the Lord's coming, huh? No, what he's saying is everybody eats and drinks all the time. Marrying and giving in marriage. Oh, boy, folks getting married on... Well, not quite as many getting married nowadays. They're just living together without that. But what he's saying is it's business as usual. No difference. And so much as the people of the flood were taken by surprise and did not know, there was no sign that was about to rain, not a cloud in the sky, not a rumble of thunder or lightning. And they would have known what it was if it had been, because it never rained before. No sign. You also see it in verse 37, what we said, the days of Noah. You see it in verse 42. And remember, he's talking to his disciples, the folks on the inside. If anybody got any inside information, they'd have it. He was talking to his own elect, his chosen. In verse 42, he says, you don't know when your Lord's coming. Watch, therefore. They said, Lord, tell us what your sign's going to be. He says, watch, you don't know when he's coming. Well, of course they didn't. That's the reason they asked him. But he did not tell them the sign of his coming. Verse 44, you see it, he reiterated again. Therefore be also ready. And that's what he has in view in the judgment parables. For as in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man cometh. When you're not thinking he's going to come, that's when he comes. Let me remind you again, he's talking to his own elect when he says that. His disciples. The believers. Now, who do you think this fella is who says, I got the information on it. I know when he's coming. I've got it fixed up. Or I don't know. But he's talking to his own disciples. Says, ye, such an hour as you think not the Son of Man coming. So this second question is not answered. And so you can quit looking for that. You can try to look for something else in this. You worry about that. Now, you may be disappointed. We'll just tear out, throw away your Bible. If it ain't there, it ain't in there. There's something better than that in here. But that's not in here. That's not the cause. That's not the purpose of his answer. And that's not what he's saying. Don't get hung up on that snag. Sail past that one. Now, he gives two groups of information to them. The first group he tells them about some non-significant events of the age. Non-significant events of the age. Now, when I say non-significant, I do not mean they don't amount to anything. But I mean that they in themselves are not signs of anything. These are not signs. The only thing they signify is that Jesus Christ knew exactly what was going to happen. And he was a true prophet of God because they sure do come to pass just like he said they would. That's what he gives them to. They're not a sign of anything other than themselves. And the faithfulness of our God when he says, these things shall come to pass. Now, these non-significant events of the age are, first of all, the beginnings of sorrows. That's what he calls them in verse 8. All these are the beginnings of sorrows. What are they? Verse 6, wars. There shall be wars. Wars are not a sign of anything except the depravity and meanness and the wickedness of man and the unrest and the torment of his heart and soul and of his greed and selfishness and meanness. That's really signified. Outside of the faithfulness of God, there are going to be wars. Men don't believe that. We're going to set up the League of Nations. We're going to set up NATO. We're going to set up all of these, and ain't going to have wars anymore. We got our peace plans. We got our peace movements. We got our peace marches. We're going to stop the war. No, you're not. Not going to do that. The Lord said there's going to be wars. There's still going to be wars. I don't like them. They're the height of man's insanities. But they're going to be them. Not only that, he says there are going to be threats of wars, rumors of wars. And these false prophets, every time there gets to be a rumor of a war, you know what they make out of it? Well, folks, Armageddon's on the scene. This could be Armageddon. Here's the kings of the east, and here's the powers from the north, and here's the 10-nation federated kingdom, and here's the mark of the beast. It's all coming together. Rumors of wars. He said, ain't nothing but the beginning of sorrows. What's that? Nothing but the beginning of sorrows. Yes, there's rumors of wars. International hostilities. Verse 7. Nation rising against nation. Speaks nothing but the depravity of man and the necessity of the justice of Almighty God. As long as there are men that group themselves under philosophies and political parties and economic systems and so forth, there are going to be hostilities. As long as men are greedy, trying to get what someone else has, there's going to be international hostilities. And I'm not opposed to peace negotiations and summits and all of that thing. Dear friends, we need to get as much peace as we can, but it's not going to stop the hostilities. There will be earthquakes. Always earthquakes. What do they mean? Simply that Jesus was right. He understood. That's an awesome, friend. The world, when the terra firma underneath you starts shaking itself like a wet dog, when the buildings around you start waving like palms in the breeze, that's an awful thing. That old centurion, when that happened at Jesus' crucifixion, he says, God's in this thing somewhere. This man's the Son of God. That'll make you think about God. But he says, that isn't it. That isn't it. These awful calamities, these eruption of volcanoes, burial of cities and peoples wiped out. I was thinking about this yesterday in that airplane flying up 30,000 feet above, a clear day. I could look down upon those mountains, which as a little boy in a sandbox would look like ripples on the sand. And I thought, what you could do as a little boy with his ripples on the sand in the sandbox, you could take your hand and just wipe it across it and smooth it out. You could do that. You could get out and blow, fill in the valleys. You could take a bucket of water and throw on it. And when you got through, all the mountains were gone and the whole terrain was changed. And there was nothing to it. Nothing big, nothing significant had happened. The whole world gets in an uproar when a dam breaks or a flood. And the flood comes down. One of those little crevices, one of those little wrinkles in the earth, fills it in a little bit and wipes out 1,000 people's lives. It's a big thing. But dear friend, God's just dropped a drop of water there. They talked about the Hoover Dam up above the Colorado and all the cities that have built and down beneath it and the lesser dams and how the threat of recent floods almost threatened the breaking of that. And what would happen if that dam ever broke? Dear friends, it's going to break one of these days. The Corps of Engineers tells us, although we've got the locks down here, at Simsport to stop the Mississippi from taking a shortcut to the Gulf of Mexico in order to save Baton Rouge and New Orleans from sitting high and dry. But those engineers got sense enough to admit it's just a matter of time. The Mississippi going the shortcut and everything in the Chappelle River Valley is going with it. Oh, we such little old finite, minute specks sitting here, thinking the earthquake is something. A flood is something. There's nothing, but he says, just beginnings of sorrows. We want to make it something great and big, and God said, there's just a little sorrow, passing thing. Beginning of sorrows, natural disasters, diseases, and pests. All sorts of things we don't know how to deal with. We cure one disease, and 10 appears in its place.
That's right.
You get rid of one thing, bring in one particular natural enemy of some particular pest to eat them up, and he fosters a half a dozen more worse than he is. Diseases and pestilences, drought and famine, he speaks of. Persecutions, these are non-significant events. They shall deliver you to be afflicted, shall kill you. That's what happened to the disciples in the apostolic age. And then he speaks of the decline of faith is going to follow that. These are consecutive events. One is a sign of the other. But there follows that a decline of faith. Now, remember, I said decline of faith, not the decline of Christendom. In fact, the opposite is true. With the expansion of Christendom, faith declines. Certainly, with a great expanse of Christendom, with the advent of Constantine, immediately faith began to decline. Decline of faith. Many shall be offended. What are they offended at? The Bible tells us they offended at the truth. Folks have shallow root. He hears the word, he grows up shallow, and after a while he gets offended at the truth. The scandal of Christianity. Did you know that Christianity, the Christian truth, is becoming more and more a scandalous thing in today's mentality? The idea of one person dying for another, that the existence of a God would require human blood to propitiate them. How uncivilized is that? The outrageous presumption that one particular religious group, Christianity, would be the only people of God. Isn't that scandalous? Who ever heard anything so outrageous? What are some folks offended about? They decline because of the offense, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Betrayal. Strife, hatred, that's not a sign of anything except that the Lord told the truth. This is the course of the age. Someone says, why does there have to be so many denominations? Well, it's because the Lord said, here's this betrayal and strife and hatred. And many false prophets shall arise. The rise of false prophets. Coldness and backsliding, verse 12. Because iniquity shall abound. Why iniquity abound? It gets to be fun. The world sets it forth as fun. And the church says if you enjoy it, if it enhances your life, must be good. Iniquity abounds, therefore the Bible must be a lie. The love of many shall wax cold. Let me call your attention to the many here. Just a little aside. Note the many. Verse 10, many shall be offended. Many shall betray. Many shall be betrayed. Many shall hate. Many false prophets. Many shall be deceived. Iniquity shall abound. The love of many shall wax cold. But verse 13 does not say, and many shall be saved. He leaves off the many there. Now, this is in stark contrast that he's just talked about many, 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 many. And in the midst of that, he says, don't worry about the many. You will be tempted to think because you are among the few that you're missing. But it isn't, doesn't. I mean, the quantity, The quantity means nothing. He that shall endure to the end, he wasn't going to be saved. Doesn't make a difference how little or how small his bunch is in. Following that, or coming along with that, will be the worldwide dispersal of the gospel. Verse 14. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness to all nations, and then shall the end come. And the people who will tell you what we need to do is to hurry up and get the gospel all over the world so the Lord can come. The only reason the Lord hasn't come yet is we haven't quite preached the gospel to the ends of the nations. And when we do that, he's going to come. No, dear friend, what he's saying is that the end will not come until the gospel is preached unto all nations. But let me tell you this, it already has been. You're going to Africa? Fine, you're a couple of thousand years late. That Enoch took the gospel back to Africa in the first century. Wherever you go, all over this world now, you're not going with something brand new. You'll find that churches have been established, and they've been established long enough to apostate and split and fight and cuss and start others. Everywhere it is. It's been there a long time. We're not waiting on that. But he says there will be a worldwide dispersal of the gospel. These are non-significant events. Then he gives a group of consecutive events with identifiable signs. That is, these signs that follow consecutively one another. There is, first of all, the desolation of the temple. That's the next thing that's on order for them. Verse 15, when ye shall therefore see the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whosoever readeth, let him understand. Now, various ones have disagreed exactly what this abomination of desolation is. Some say it was the erection of a statue on the temple site. Some say it was the offering by Epiphanes of a swine upon the sacred altar in the temple. That would have certainly enraged the Jews. Others said it was the erecting of the Roman eagles, sign of the Roman Empire, over the temple itself, meaning that the temple had been profaned and come under possession of the hated Roman Empire. But whatever it was, the Christians at that age recognized that that was it. That was it. Now this is a definite sign that he gives those that they could recognize, and the Christians of that particular time that were in Jerusalem at that time recognized it, and every single one of them left town. They did what Jesus told them to. He said, get out of there. There he says, let them which be in Judea flee to the mountains. He says, if you on a housetop, don't worry about getting all your furniture out. Leave it. If you're in the field and you got a crop to get in, don't worry about that. Leave your crop. Get out of town. If you're pregnant, that's too bad. If you're giving birth to a child, you're in bad trouble, because then it's time to leave. They recognize that. That's a literal prophecy that was fulfilled. Now, of course, that cannot have anything to do with the coming of the Lord, because when the Lord comes, you don't even know where are you going to run. They were running for that desolation of the temple. The whole temple at that time was destroyed. Jerusalem was destroyed. The temple was thrown down. He answers their question. He says, there shall not be one stone left upon another. That's when it happened. Not only did they dismantle the temple completely, they plowed up the streets of the city. That fulfilled. Had taken place. And that is followed by the universal dispersal of Christianity. Up until that time, which was still in the first century, up until that time, the Christian church still had the idea that the center of Christianity was at Jerusalem. If they had a theological problem of any kind, they'd go up to Jerusalem and confer with the apostles who were right there. That was headquarters. That was the place where you went to get your theology and everything corrected. And that was the center, they thought, of worship. It's still fixed in the Jewish mind that this temple is a center of worship. Well, God fixed that. If he can't get the idol out of your mind, he'll get it out of your sight where you can't even find it. That's what he did. And he says, after that happens now, don't ever let anybody come around telling you, God set another center of worship up over here. This is where the Lord's be found. We're the ones got it. He says, there's going to be a universal dispersal. Somebody tells you over here, don't pay any attention to that. Somebody tells you it's over there, don't pay any attention to that. No, sir. Well, where is it going to be then? He says, wherever you see the eagles, there's the carcass. Now, folks have tried to make all kind of things out of that. I've heard some time ago, some scientists observed that there was a proliferation of scavenger birds in the Holy Land. There's growing a whole big crop of buzzards. And the false prophets decided that the Lord was hatching out a big crop of buzzards to eat all the dead bodies in the body of in the Battle of Armageddon. But that isn't what he's saying at all. He's giving a figure of speech. Very familiar figure of speech. Wherever the carcass is, there you'll find the eagles gathered. Very familiar figure of speech. And we're familiar with that. They've got us Southerners say fire towers. Fire towers. Sitting on top of these hills, they used to man them with somebody all the time. They use airplanes so much. Now, do you know what they're looking for in those fire towers and those airplanes? Somebody tell me what they're looking for.
Smoke.
They're looking for smoke. Of course, they're not really hunting smoke. What are they hunting? Fire. And they know wherever the smoke is, that's where they're going to see they're not going to see the fire. Fire down on the ground in the grass, but they see the smoke. And you say, where there's smoke, there's fire. Right? And, of course, that's the way you find the honey in the woods. You don't go around looking for honey, tapping on every tree, climbing every tree, sticking your hand in every hole, trying to find honey. You don't do that. There's an easier way to find honey than that. What is it? What? Yeah, you look for bees. You find a bee, if you can follow him. I guarantee you where that bee is, you'll find some honey. Where the bees is, that's where the honey is. Now, this is what he's saying. Where you find believers, you will find Christ. There he is. Where is he? He's not the temple. He's not in the desert. He's not here. He's not somewhere else. Where is he? Wherever his people are. Where two or three gather in my name, that's where I am. That's where he is. Where you find Christians, that's where he is. Find you some. The universal dispersal of Christianity, and along with that, the rise of false messiahs and false prophets. God has showed me that I am his instrument to deliver this nation for this day. This ministry that God has showed me to gather all people for a sign of the end time, and he has conferred the last day gospel ministry upon me. I'm it, folks. Come on. That works. The Bible says they shall deceive many. Many shall be their followings. Saints, if it's telling me what they're saying on the television now, I don't notice what they're saying. I can listen to them. We got it! Those fellows don't. We got the private airplanes. We got the big houses. We get the money. We got the empire. Everybody else just jealous. We the ones got it. God's got his hands on us. We the ones. Now, he's not saying I'm Christ. Nobody big fool enough to do that. He isn't a fool, nobody. But he's saying, I'm a soul. You got a need? Write me a letter, me a little money, and I'll send you a prayer cloth, or I'll send you a little piece of plastic and you make things the devil with, or I'll send you a little chip off the cross, or some sand from the Holy Land, and you put this where it hurts. And that's it. And this will apply. False Christ, false prophets, that's what he said. The rise of the false messiahs and false prophets. And look at this. The dimming of the heavenly witness. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, and the tribulation of those days, what he's talking about, it begins in verse 21. Great tribulation, great persecution. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, and he's talking about that awesome, that awful persecution that took place among the early Christians. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, Stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. I understand this cannot be taken literally, or you make Christ a false prophet by having ignorantly subscribed to the ideas that the heavens were kind of like a blanket or a dome out there, and the stars were little lights that stuck out there, and if you shake them a little bit, they'd fall to the earth. That isn't what it means. You cannot ascribe literacy to a figurative, metaphorical revelation of what's going to happen. And what happens immediately follows this. The sun and the moon and the stars have always been used as figures and symbols of the witness of heaven. The sun, Jesus Christ himself, being the day star. The moon being the light while he's gone. The stars being the witnesses, the messengers that he sent. And this can mean nothing except the dimming and the darkness of a heavenly witness in the days that follow the apostolic age, a progressing darkness coming upon the face of the earth, and a scattering of God's messengers to where they're few and found, far to find, falling on every side. Now these simply describe the course of the age in that events. And then he says, after that, the Lord's going to come. That's what he says. Then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man. Won't be any other signs than these. That's all. Now, that wasn't what they asked for. They said, the sign. Not going to be any sign for this. Now, he does tell them, when you see these things come to pass, you know that it's near, even at the doors. That has to do with the consecutive events. When one happens, you know the other's coming. It's going to happen. But he gives us some warning. He says, learn from the fig tree when you see all these come to pass. These all come to pass in the church age. It will. The only thing this generation shall not pass away till all these things be fulfilled has to do with the church age, that time, this order of people, this dispensation, this particular time, because they did not come to pass in that particular biological generation. But this age will not pass. These are the end times. The end times started back there in the first century. No question about the end times. We've been in the end times since the apostolic age. This has been all that transpiring. Know that it's nigh. The summer is nigh. Now the practical value of our Lord's recorded words and his answer to his disciples are given, first of all, in the warnings, and second, in the comforts. Quickly now, I want you to show the warnings. I want you to see the warnings. In view of the apostasy, he that endure shall endure to the end shall be saved. Verse 13. That is the admonition, the encouragement, the warning that we must persevere. We do not rest presumptuously upon God's preservation, but we actively persevere unto the end, lest we should join the many who betray and fall away. Remember the Lord's warning. He who endures to the end, and only he, shall be saved. In view of the false Christs and the false prophets, in verse 4, he says, take heed that no man deceive you. Many will be deceived. If possible, they're going to deceive you too, the very elect, and they will, to some extent. In verse 24, if possible, they shall deceive the very elect. In view of those, he warns us lest we be deceived. The person most likely to be deceived is the fella who is most certain he's not going to be. Let us not be foolish and think that we are impregnable, that we cannot be hoodwinked. So we have that warning. In view of the false exclusive movements and cults, verse 23 and 26, lo, Christ is here, don't believe it. Lo, he's there. Don't believe it. And as lightning cometh out of the east and shineth to the west, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. Also, in view of the secrecy of his coming, the warning. Verse 42, and we're getting close to what he wants to develop as he gets into the parables. Watch therefore. Now, the disciples had gotten the answer to their question. They could have said, boys, we can take it easy until we see this sign. And then we can start getting vigilant. But they didn't get the answer they desired. He says, you're just going to have to watch. Why? I ain't going to tell you. You don't know. That's the warning. In view of the secrecy of his coming and his imminence, watch. That's another message. But let's look briefly at the conference. In view of the purported signs and wonders that people, it says, this is a sign of this, this is a sign of that. Verse 4, he says, don't let anybody deceive you. Verse 6, he says, the end isn't yet come. Don't worry about that. He writes to the Thessalonians, and says, I don't want you to be shaken or troubled by the word of some that the time is at hand. There's some things that's going to come to pass yet. In view of the sudden of his coming, well, you say, now, Brother Merle, if I don't know when he's coming, if I don't know at such a time as I think not the Lord's coming, doesn't that provoke uneasiness and worry? No, it doesn't. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 tells you why it doesn't. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. But of the times and seasons, brethren, you don't need to know. You have no need that I write unto you. You know this. You yourself know perfectly well that the day of the Lord so cometh as a thief in the night. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. Let me give you an illustration that I've given several times before. Some time ago, a couple came through Alexandria to take care of some business, and they came out and stopped to visit with us in the afternoon, and they kept visiting with us, and it got supper time. And it looked like they wasn't going to leave before supper, so it looked like we were going to have to feed them. And so we asked them, would you all stay for supper? And they said, no, we our children's at home alone, and we need to get back to them. And they thought about it a little bit and said, you know, we could call them and let them know that we're going to be a couple hours later. And then they had second thoughts about it and says, on the second thought, it'd probably be best if we don't call them and tell them we're going to be 2 hours later. Now, you know what the rationale behind that was. Mom and Daddy ain't going to get here for at least 2 hours. Now, he said, you see, if people are bent on doing evil, all they can get by with, then they should be worried about the imminency and the suddenness of the Lord's coming. They'll have to get caught. But you see, if a person is not bent on disobedience, but he knows of the omnipresence of the Lord, that he's in his presence and he wants to obey him, wants to please him all the time, he isn't worried about the fact he might sneak up on him. That isn't it at all. That's what he's saying here. This is the comfort that we have. When they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction come upon them. Verse 4, but brethren, ye brethren, are not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. You're children of the light. And children of the day, we're not of the night, nor of the darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as do others. Let us watch and be sober. The Lord's coming. We will be ready for him. First of all, because we are ready right now. Now, if you are not ready now, you have no such comfort and assurance. Now, you might have it in your mind that you're going to get ready before he comes. But if you're not ready, you have no reason to believe ever that you will ever be ready. We're not going to be taken unawares. We're ready. We are ready, and we will be ready, because we're going to stay ready. I hope you're ready. If you're not, you sure do need to get ready. And stay ready.